welcome to the Screamcast, episode 95. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yeah!
Delayed reaction. Are you there?
Yeah!
Okay. BJ is careening along the interstate after watching some WWE, or is it WCW, whatever the hell, wrestling.
I don't know. I don't think WCW exists anymore.
Whatever it is right now.
I think it's just like one thing.
What is it? I basically stopped
WNUF.
WWF was when I stopped paying attention. So I apologize to all the fans.
So it's WWF and then WCW, and then they came together and they like became like WWE or WE.
Okay.
Okay. Wrestling Entertainment.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we want her to drive safe, and her phone is about to die, so unfortunately she will not be joining us on today's show, but I think safety is key here.
Safety.
All the time. So she will be joining us next episode for sure. We'll make sure of that. But this week we have a very special episode. We're going to be talking to the screenwriters of
Rock, and directors
and well director. No, he directed too. Directors. Yeah, yeah.
They direct together.
I'm just, you know, the IMDb gets me all screwed up. But of the film Rocktober Blood.
Yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait. But first of all, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow! I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. I got into some good stuff this week. I'm pretty proud of myself for knocking down the, you know, to watch pile.
Nice.
You'd be proud of me. Who wants to start? Do you want to start? Or do you want to, I want to start? I'll start.
Okay.
We're very democratic. That's here.
That's fine. You just tell me what to do, Sean. I do anything by your command.
Oh, man. Okay. Sorry. But anyway, the first thing I got to this week was Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak that just came out last week. And I'd heard a lot about it. I'd heard a lot of positive and negative, as kind of with most of del Toro's flicks recently, huh? He seems to be hit or miss. But I'm an unashamed fan of Guillermo del Toro. Pacific Rim's big dumb fun, but I'm a huge fan of his earlier work above everything else. But anyway, so I decided to buy this and watch it, and I had a good time with it. It wasn't really a horror film. He calls it gothic. What does he call it? Gothic romance. But he definitely doesn't call it horror. But,
I think he's afraid to call his movies horror.
Well, I mean, it's not really. I mean, I don't know. Like, I would call it, like, gothic horror. I mean, there's a bunch of different elements to the film. There is a ghost element to it, but mainly it's a story of this young woman she's like an aspiring author. She is played by Mia Wasikowska. I think I got that right. And I don't think I've seen anything she's been in before.
Do you think you just got a name right?
Yeah, I think so. Wasikowska. So this Edith girl meets this gentleman who's basically trying to raise money for this project he has, mining this blood red clay in Europe, in the UK. And so the one thing leads to another. She ends up heading over with him to the UK after one thing leads to another. And in the meantime, she does see these ghosts happen, but the main thing is there's some sort of mystery involving Tom Hiddleston's character, along with his sister, Lucille, played by Jessica Chastain. But anyway, I had a lot of fun with this movie. I thought it was, you know, it was a slower paced film. It took its time creating, you know, with the characters, and I enjoyed a lot of the early parts of the film when it's her and her father and her with the writing and things like that, and the introduction of Tom Hiddleston's character. Charlie Hunnam is in this, and he's still pretty damn bland. I totally forgot he was in it, and he's like one of the main characters. But
I think that whole movie's bland. I don't think it's his fault.
Very measured and very slow paced. I mean, it's definitely trying for like this gothic horror, like in the vein of like Hammer films. But it's like there's like I just couldn't place like something was off.
It looks like a soap opera.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely. I don't know, like. Here's the movie I can kind of compare this to that worked. Like The Woman in Black is a Hammer film, you know, PG-13 ghost story, but that film like worked as far as how everything looks and how it feels, like the haunted house aspect and everything. Something about this was a tad artificial, and I didn't really like the ghosts that much. Like they didn't really do anything for me as far as creep me out. And when you have a ghost element to a story, it should be creepy, but they just felt really artificial to me. And I had some, you know, went back and forth online. They looked very CGI, but I guess Ryan Turek, of course, dropped some knowledge on me. And they were a combination of real effect, like some prosthetics with some CGI enhancement. But I think the CGI enhancement made it, I don't know, just it reminded me of the ghost in Mama. And I didn't like that. I didn't like how that ghost looked in Mama. And I didn't like how these ghosts looked here. So for me, it kind of drew me out of the film. But what kept me interested was, I think, for the most part, was Mia Wasikowska, her character. She did a really great job kind of, I guess, leading the film. Because she's the main character. And there's enough kind of mystery to keep me intrigued, although it was nothing supremely surprising. So, I mean, I'm always going to be in Guillermo del Toro's corner as far as a film goes. I think his, like, passion is there for it, but I don't think maybe he wasn't passionate enough about it. I don't know. There's something just off about the film that I couldn't 100% embrace the thing.
I think he... I don't want to say he worries, because I think that's the wrong thing to say, but like in a way, to flat out put it, seems like he should focus more on story and storytelling rather than visuals, because I think that's where he faulted at Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that he wanted it to look good, which it did, but... Yeah. Man, that movie felt like it was made for 12-year-olds.
Well, I think in a way he was. It's kind of a Star Wars, you know.
Yeah, right. But there's no substance to the script.
Yeah,
and it's kind of the same thing that goes for Crimson Peak, and you know, I can't say that for Pan's Labyrinth because I think he really nailed it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think he did that with like the second Hellboy film, which the first was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's done a good job in the past with, you know, The Devil's Backbone and Kronos.
Kronos and Devil's Backbone. Like, I would love to see him go back to a film like that.
But that's the thing. Yeah, I think he focused a lot more on script and, you know, and tension. Now it just seems that he is making films that are pretty to the eye. He's becoming he's like a glorified Michael Bay. But that's kind of what like. It's like, oh man, your movies look really good. Because, I mean, for the most part, I mean, you know, the Transformer movies blow, but the Transformers actually look pretty good. Some of the action.
There's a reason I own the Transformers movies, even though 2 especially is awful. But whenever I want to kind of test my TV or sound system, I always throw in a Transformers Blu-ray because those look and sound the best as far as like that goes. But yeah, the movies blow.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he did a great job on the Blade sequel, aside from, you know, that shot in the lights. But, I mean, yeah, I think he's a good director. He really is. It's just that I think he's not grasping, like, plots, it seems. Like, yeah. He's just not getting it.
Yeah. I mean, I still love the movie. I don't love it, but I really do respect it a lot, like Crimson Peak. I don't know. It's like a love-hate with it. Not a love-hate, but I mean, I don't know. There's something just off about it, where I'm thinking about it a lot, so I know that the movie stayed with me. A lot of the non-ghost stuff, early in the movie, I think it's almost home run. Before you bring in any ghost elements or anything, the characters and everything are there. It's just as the plot starts to unfold, it kind of goes into, and I don't know if he was trying that or not, but it goes into, you know, if you've seen these types of movies and you've seen these, there's, you know, these types of twists and turns, you kind of see it coming a mile away. So I don't know if he was trying to keep it us guessing or not, but as a mystery, the mystery, I think, can get revealed pretty early on if you're paying attention. But I don't know. I liked it, didn't love it. I wanted to love it, though. So, but that's Crimson Peak. It looks wonderful. All right, next up, I have a stack of Code Red Blu-rays that I have been meaning to get to. It was very... Crimson Peak was like overly lit, I guess. Too perfectly lit. Too bright in certain scenes where it should have been darker. I get you.
Yeah.
All right, moving along here. I got a Code Red Blu-ray here to talk about. And Code Red's hit or miss. It's like they're one of those companies where you kind of want to buy all their movies because they're mostly, you know, they're like, they're bad shit. So, and they're on Blu-ray, so it's something that you want to grab, but his price points are crazy. This one I got when it was a bundle, so I think I paid about $20 per movie, which is if you want to, I don't know, but some you don't know what you're getting sometimes. But I watched the movie Silk from 86.
It's a Santiago movie. Most of Santiago's movies are pretty fun.
Yep. This was pretty damn fun.
Sirio.
Yeah, Sirio Santiago. I don't know how to pronounce the star's name. C-E-C. Sec? Varel? Cease Varel?
I'll just let you go.
I've never seen that name before. But it's your standard, like, 80s cop movie. It's set in Honolulu. There's some bad guys and he'd be taken down, and some of the cops may be crooked, and it's up to Silk to save the day. But it's fun, man. It's just one of those fun 80s flicks. Not worth if you're to buy it now, it's gonna be like $30 if it's even still available for that. Not worth that. But if you ever see this movie, give it a watch. The guy in the movie, is it Bill McLaughlin? He's been in a bunch of other things. I think he was actually in another one of these movies. There's a bunch of scenes where he looks just like Will Ferrell. It's incredible. It's like you can swap Will Ferrell out in that scene, and it would be like a perfect match.
You just turned a bunch of people off to watching that movie.
Dude, he it's a serious, see these serious scenes, but he's making the Will Ferrell kind of frowny face. You know what I mean? And with his hair and everything.
I haven't seen that movie.
And his hairy chest.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
He looks just like it. There's one of the henchmen here. Like, he has a big old beard and like a cut off shirt and his sunglasses the whole time. There's a scene of him running in slow motion. It's just incredible. But, very run of the mill 80s action flick, but a lot of fun if you're into that sort of thing. I'd recommend checking it out. The cover has her in a bra, but she does not have a bra with a gun at all in the film. Sorry to burst your bubble. False advertising. The scene that's referenced on the movie poster, she's actually fully dressed in the film. But for the poster, they
maybe
put her in a bra.
Maybe she's playing on a co-bed for him.
Yeah.
And then Bill will just continue it, then you could sell it for like $100.
Well, you know what's great is we don't have to deal with that bullshit anymore because Screen Archives sells their movies, so most of them. True. Occasionally he does his exclusives, which I don't pay attention to. And those ones he usually gets pissed off and then pulls them. But Screen Archives, they stock them, so you know. I don't think he can pull them from Screen Archives. Fuck that guy. All right, so in honor of Arrow Films releasing Pray for Death on Blu-ray, which is a show...
Is that how you're going to say it each time?
No. Which is a Sho Kasugi film. And I realized that I hadn't seen... I hadn't watched my Kino Blu-rays yet of Revenge of the Ninja and Enter the Ninja. So I watched for the first one, Enter the Ninja, and I gotta say, man, I was a little bit disappointed by Enter the Ninja because I was kind of
It's not the greatest movie.
The beginning is batshit amazingness with all the ninjas, and then you realize that it's a training session, which makes no sense because the main teacher or whatever is beheaded, and then it turns out it was a dummy, but it looked real to me. But you end up following Franco Nero. He's the star. He ends up being the star.
Franco Nero.
And he's the one white dude in this clan of ninjas who trained with them. So then you go along with his story, and Sho Kasugi. Is kind of left to the sidelines until the end of the film when he comes back as the big bad. But I don't know. I thought this was kind of like a run of the mill kind of 80s action with some ninja stuff. But I was kind of disappointed. I was following around this hairy mustached man as the main ninja in the film, and not a good old Sho. But it has its moments. There's some pretty great action beats in this flick, but and of course the end delivers with the battle of the ninjas.
I like Revenge better, but I think the highlight of that series was Ninja 3. So,
well, Ninja 3 bar none, I think, is the highlight of the series. So Revenge of the Ninja though is a huge step up from Enter the Ninja. Sho Kasugi enters the starring role, and this little kid gets to do some major ninja kick-ass stuff, which is amazing. The scene where he's it's Revenge of the Ninja where he's fighting the blonde chick, right?
Revenge,
because that Pray for Death has kids in it as well. But yeah, Revenge of the Ninja has his son in a flat out like brawl with the busty blonde that may or may not be on his side. But the action scenes are awesome. Just a lot of fun. And, of course, that ragtag group of stereotypes that he fights on the playground is always amazing. So it turned out I had seen Revenge of the Ninja, so I wasn't... So I just sat back and I enjoyed the ride of Revenge of the Ninja. First time on Blu-ray, though. I think last time I saw it was on just a crappy DVD transfer. Was it on DVD? Was that a bad transfer before? I don't know. It looked amazing.
Yeah, I think they all had MGM releases on DVD.
So that was great. I mean, Kino just did an awesome job with these. Enter the Ninja's bare bones, but on Revenge of the Ninja, they offer some audio commentary with Sam Furstenberg and then the stunt coordinator, Stephen Lambert. So some good stuff there on that. So
I think didn't the UK, or not the UK, didn't like Germany release like a box set of all three?
I think you can
get all three like in a big deluxe box set from somewhere. I think I've seen it before.
I thought somebody did. I know American Ninja came out. 88 Films did that. But
yeah,
I'm not
I'm
sure.
Saying this is Enter Revenge and Ninja 3.
Yeah, I think all of them have like a box set together, which is pretty damn cool for those movies, because they're all different and kind of crazy.
I'm looking right now, double checking. It is, who did that?
I don't know.
It's region B. I think it's UK.
Hey man, there you go. So I know Germany released them on Blu-ray, single disc, because I bought those, a couple years ago, years ago.
Eureka Entertainment, which is a pretty decent company. They do some good work.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have the Ninja Trilogy. It's if you have region free, it's a pretty damn good set. But if you don't want to grab the separate ones, Screen Factory has Ninja 3, and then Kino has Enter the Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja. But Arrow is going to be releasing a couple more Shokusugi films. So the first one that was released was Pray for Death. And, it's not top tier, but I had some fun. The same kid that plays his kid in Revenge of the Ninja is in it. And he does some ass kicking as well, which is fantastic. I don't know, man. I had a lot of fun with it. It's if you've seen all these films, it just follows right along suit.
Pray for Death?
Yeah. But Pray for Death, he has the metal, Shredder mask.
He looks like Shredder. Yeah, Shredder.
Which I don't know is an actual ninja, because I thought ninjas were supposed to be in the shadows. It doesn't seem like they'd be really wearing metal.
Hey man, Sho can wear whatever he wants.
But this one has a battle.
Are you gonna tell him different?
No, man. But this one has the battle of two ninjas. We got a good ninja and a bad ninja, right? Is that Pray for Death? Am I getting confused? No, Revenge of the Ninja has a good ninja and a bad ninja.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen Pray for Death.
They're all running together for me. There's a lot of similarities with Revenge of the Ninja.
You can't watch all. You can't.
I'm getting them all confused.
Because you're going. Yeah, all your ninja movies consist of, the white ninja being good, the red or black ninja being bad, and then for some reason a lot of them carry AK-47s.
Oh, there's no AK-47s in these ones.
No. I'm saying in a lot of the older, 80s and 90s ninja movies, for some reason a lot of the ninjas have guns, which I never understood.
Well, I blame G.I. Joe. Your internet is sucking balls today.
Yeah, internet is not doing very well.
All right, but anyway, this Arrow release, it's fun, but I'm getting them all confused. I can't remember if there's a bad ninja in this one or not. Oh my god!
Well,
there's not. There's not a bad ninja in this. There's a bad gangster.
Watch this. How do you forget?
Dude, I watched Revenge of the Ninja and immediately watched it with Pray for Death, and I'm getting both the films confused because they had the same exact little kid in them playing his son, who's also a badass martial artist.
I'm excited to check it out because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. I mean, I can't even really remember seeing it. I remember having the tape and watching it, but that I've also might get that infused with Rage of Honor.
right. And Rage of Honor is the next one that's coming out.
Yeah, I don't have my Pray for Death tape anymore.
Huh.
But I have my Rage of Honor tape, and I don't know which one I've actually seen.
Yeah. No, it looks pretty good. This is the unrated version, and it looks like they spliced in a lesser quality transfer to get the uncut. I think because you can tell on certain scenes that are more violent that they look a little bit different. They're not as crisp. So I'm not sure exactly what they did when they restored this, because I know the UK 101 films has the rights to release Pray for Death and Rage of Honor, and they don't have the uncut versions, because I was going to buy those to try to save money. But they actually tweeted at me and told me that, sorry, we don't have the uncut versions Arrow does, and those are only getting the U.S. release. If you're in the U.K. and want to buy a U.K. Blu-ray of Pray for Death and A Rage of Honor, it's cut. But if you want the uncut versions, you need to buy the U.S. releases of the Arrow films Blu-rays, which is kind of...
What? So the Arrow releases in the U.K. and they're cut?
Arrow is releasing these in the U.S. only. the UK rights went 101 Films has the UK release rights.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, so if you buy the 101 Films Blu-ray, those are going to be edited. The R-rated versions, not the uncut.
Yeah, 101 Films isn't the greatest with stuff like that. Like, they're, I don't know, they're kind of like the Kino of, Kino and Olive.
Yeah, they kind of, they just do bare-bones stuff. I mean, I'm glad. I mean, I've gotten some, you know, I mean, they're the only company that would put out toy soldiers on Blu-ray, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one movie I was going to try to get to that 101 Films has, a Shokusugi film called Black Eagle or something like that with Van Damme.
Yeah, Black Eagle. Yeah, it's been released on Blu-ray a couple times in different countries. Yeah. So I was hoping it would come over here eventually.
Yeah, it hasn't yet. I was going to try to get to that, but I didn't get to it. I hear it's a bit, you know, not as good as these, but I mean, it's Van Damme and Shokusugi. I got to see it. All right.
Shokusugi had this thing, like his deal. He had a deal, I think, with Trans World Entertainment, the people that put out like his, you know, like Pray for Death and stuff like that back in the day. He had this thing. I don't know how many, because I have like six of them, but I didn't place it until, you know, a couple years ago. He had this thing called Shokusugi Presents Ninja Theater, and it's these. And on the tapes, you put it in, and he's the host of this show called Ninja Theater, and he talks wow. about all these, like, crazy, like, you know, it's like Joe Bob Briggs, but for ninja movies.
That's awesome.
And, yeah, and I have a few, and I would, you know, I saw it the other day, and I was like, holy shit, I forgot about that, because I watched a couple of the films. But, yeah, it's nuts. I don't know how long he did it or where it aired.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's the host. I don't know if it was a special thing for these tapes, but yeah, Trans World Entertainment put them out, and it's like Shokusugi Presents whatever. But it's pretty cool.
I need to track. I know that I have on that big old box that I have from Mill Creek Entertainment, the classic or was it Cult Cinema Collection. I know there's one called it. Was it the Nine Deaths of the Ninja? That one features an opening dance number. Opening ninja dance
number. I haven't seen that movie.
It's bonkers, but Pray for Death also has an opening ninja dance sequence. Kind of like, it's almost like they're trying to do the Bond thing.
I love dance sequences.
It's fantastic. So, I apologize if I didn't really get the plots to these movies spelled out to you, but they're 80s ninja movies, and I think you know what to expect. Basically, someone is going to piss the ninja off, and innocent people will die, and he will go to collect
revenge.
You probably kill
his family.
On all the motherfuckers. Family members may be involved in the deaths. Being killed. Maybe. Actually, it is all the time. That's pretty much a ninja movie for you, but ton of fun. That's all I got, man.
Gotcha. You know, you're cutting out really bad.
No, I am?
Yeah.
Damn it.
I don't know if it's me or if it's you. Because you can hear me fine, right?
No, you're cutting out.
Yeah, see, you sound like a fucking robot.
Really? Now? Do I?
Yeah.
Damn it.
But I don't know if that's me or if that's you. Like, what? Whose connection is that?
Yeah, I don't know. Skype's just being a total jerk off.
Yeah, I think it might be Skype, man.
It might be. I know, like, Xbox Live is down. Like, there are some major things going on with the internet tonight.
All right. Well, let's try to. It's good right now. So.
Okay.
Are you done?
I'm done. I got a whole bunch of stuff. I splurged. I have a lot that I need to get to. But I will try to get to all that in the next couple weeks here.
Nice.
Yep.
All right. So I will go. I don't have much. I have a few things here. I didn't get around to watching all that much. However, I do have a small little pack. So next, you've seen this, and you know, if you want to purchase the Blu-ray, you can go to thespiritcabinet.com and purchase this Blu-ray. But it's a short film from this guy named Kevin McTurk. It is called The Mill at Cobbler's End, and it is a 15-minute horror short, primarily comprised of puppetry, which is, you would think, if someone told me that, I probably wouldn't be intrigued, because I was like, okay, it's puppets, but it's really, really well done, and like kind of a gothic tale. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jason Fleming is one of the voiceovers, pretty much my number one favorite actor, so I'm kind of boxed already. But anyways, just a very kind of small tale about a witch, and you know, very, very well done, well executed, and some great just work with puppets, and also just because there's real things as well in the film, like you know, land. Like when the puppets are on land and on, yeah. So utilizing you know, trees and grass and the sky in order to tell the story. So not everything is 100%, you know, a miniature or whatever like that. And I don't know. I think instead of going the route of having you know, taking out a stick for the puppet's arm, they just kind of leave it in there. You know, they don't try to make it look 100% like the puppets are actually right. Alive. They're trying to tell a puppet, you know, using puppets.
Yeah, because the mouths
hiding it.
The mouths don't move or things like that. You know, you totally know right. They're puppets. Yeah, they do some right. Compositing and some removal of things. I know the compositor, the VFX guy, Adam Sager, and he did I was at a screening in LA, and he did a, kind of talked after the we watched it, but yeah, it's amazing, man. It's really good.
Yeah, so definitely, if you, it's kind of expensive, but it goes to a good cause for them to do more. And if you are a you know, collector, it's nice to have a Blu-ray of something. Another, I think it's on Vimeo. You can watch it.
Yeah, it's on Vimeo. You can buy it for $9. You can watch the trailer there. I'll include a link. But for $9, you can get it. Sweet. Let's see.
And then next up, I saw this movie at South by Southwest, and I wanted to put it out there again. I rewatched it, and I enjoyed it a little bit more the second time around. This one was one of the Midnighters, I believe. It was called Excess Flesh. And it's about these two girls that are roommates, Jill and I think Jennifer. And, you know, they live in L.A. And Jennifer is, you know, really pretty. You know, all the guys like her. You know, she has to basically fight them off with a stick. Jill is a little bit more ordinary and homely looking. And kind of... she goes a little crazy having her friend have all this attention, that if she wants, how do I say it without giving it away? Basically, she chains her up in the house and tortures her to an extent where it's really disgusting, like has to deal with like food and, you know, almost trying to make her what she can sit, what Earl Jill would consider ugly because of what she's been all her life. But, you know, it's kind of a mental thing. So it's a fun, gross psychological horror film. That's very limited on location, that also goes in this psychotic state, which you kind of get lost in and you will kind of gag. So it definitely was better the second time around. I couldn't believe that Midnight Releasing got to release this on DVD, but it's just kind of a small little company that releases a lot of, you know, not that great films. So when I saw this picked up, I was like, you know, I saw Excess Flesh at South by Southwest. It was fairly decent. I figured a bigger company would release it and put it on blue, but unfortunately it just has a DVD release. Next up is a film that I've seen a couple times, but I picked up the Criterion version of it, was a film called The Honeymoon Killers, which is based on a true story, and the film has been done a few times. The Lonely Hearts Club, Alleluia from last year, or 2014, was loosely based on The Honeymoon Killers. But it is about a man and woman who find each other. She becomes obsessed. His name is Ray, and her name is Martha. So Martha is finds this guy, Ray, who is a con man, and he tells her that he's a con man, kind of towards on their second date, telling her what his scam is he'll find, you know, widows that have money, and he'll, you know, seduce them and steal everything they have. Well, this kind of turns Martha on, and she gets on it too, posing as his sister. Kind of the same premise in Alleluia. Alleluia takes it to a next step and makes it ultra violent and gory. Honeymoon Killers is like in the 60s, or I guess late, maybe late 70s. Let me look at the year. 1969, so yeah, 69-70. This is also a 4K scan, which they did a great job. This was one of their DVDs that they upgraded, so I was really excited to see it. But it's very disturbing, even for 1969, watching a film that is so kind of psychotic and kind of mean. You know, if you've seen Alleluia or The Lonely Hearts Club, the other film that it's based on, nothing will kind of be spoiled for you because the story's told in different ways, either through Ray's point of view or Martha or together. This one is kind of told in the sense of in Martha's mind, I think, psychologically, because it kind of gets – I don't know, it kind of digs deep under obsession, even for her, because you would look at it as Ray is the bad guy, and it kind of turns out that they're both kind of, you know, fucked up, but Martha is pushing it even harder than Ray was pushing it when he was just a con man and single. So definitely something to pick up, very fun in a really psychotic way. So that would be a weird double feature for Access Flesh and Honeymoon Killers. next up was a Screen Factory release of the late Wes Craven. I was excited to return to this movie because I watched it when I was younger and I did not like it, but it was Serpent and the Rainbow. I enjoyed it a lot more the second time. It is a very simple story. Bill Pullman's character is an anthropologist who is sent to Haiti. And there's this mixture, this like powder, this dust that can bring people, you know, make them almost zombies. And it, you know, this movie reminds me a lot of kind of a Ken Russell style of a film, just kind of how like weird and back. I don't know. Ken Russell has this, like, I think this is one of Wes Craven's dirtiest movies. Aside from kind of Last House on the Left, like I feel dirty while watching, and not that anything that you're seeing on screen kind of fucks you up.
It's just kind of grimy, like everyone's sweaty and
it's
dirty.
I mean, it takes place in Haiti, but yeah, it's just a really like dirty movie, and that's always a thing of cinematography that actually it works. I don't care for it, but it works on me. Like, I remember one of the most notorious scenes, this is way off topic, but one of the most notorious scenes for me ever that made me super uncomfortable, it still does, like I get nervous when I think about it, is like Children of the Corn 2 or 3, when they're actually in the church and he has like kind of a wooden doll and he takes a knife and he's whittling at the nose, giving the guy a nosebleed in the church. That cinematography is just so wet and steamy and just so sweaty that it just makes you uncomfortable. And that's kind of how this whole movie feels to me. And the cinematography, if that's what they're going for, it really works. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I think it's more or less I don't know. I feel worn out after I watch the movie rather than scared.
Really? Like that. Yeah, I really liked Serpent in the Rainbow. I think it was streaming on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that when I first saw it, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean it's not a bad movie. I'm sure a lot of people have seen it, so it's not something I need to go into detail all that much. But yeah, it is an upgrade. It's a HD master from Screen Factory with actually they did a commentary with Bill Pullman, which was kind of cool. I didn't listen to it because I can't watch the movie again. I don't think so.
Really?
Well, it's good. It's just, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's one of the Wes Craven movies that I really don't care for.
Huh.
And I never have. I did enjoy it more. Like I could watch it and not be like, I think in the past I've watched it and got a little bored and got distracted.
Hmm.
But anyways, yeah, it's just an odd movie, and I don't feel it, I guess. I'm not 100%.
You have my address if you ever want to unload it.
Gotcha. All right. And next, there is a company called The Horror Pack, and they have two options. They have a DVD option and a Blu-ray option where you can get monthly four DVDs or four Blu-rays from their site, shipped to you every month. I think it's like kind of the middle of the month that you get them. That's what it feels like. However, they wanted me to feature unboxing. I'm not going to call it unboxing because I think that's, silly.
Oh, we got to do this on YouTube, man. Got to do it on YouTube. And then people will actually give a shit.
These fucking YouTubers. So anyways,
If you are a YouTuber, we mean no disrespect at all. We just are.
Yeah, well,
don't get it.
I mean, it depends on how you seriously go about
your
YouTubes. Don't be annoying with it. So anyways, they have a DVD 1 month plan that it's $20 per month. You get four DVDs. They have the DVD 3 month plan. Now that's the 1 month plan where you just do it once and you're done. They have the 3 month plan, which is $19.23, which is for 3 months with four DVDs. They have the 6 month plan, which is $18.49 and $17.74 for 12 months.
You pay all at once though, a lump sum, or do you pay every month? I think you do like a lump sum, right?
It's every six months.
Yeah.
So, and then, which a lot of people, more people like, is the 1 month plan for $24.99 to try it out. You get four horror Blu-rays. And then the 3 month plan, which is $24.24. And then the 6 month plan, which is $23.49. And the 12 month plan, which is $22.74. So, $22.74 for a year, which is what? Like almost $300. You get a movie sent to your door. So the main thing that kind of what would prevent me from doing this is as far as a collector goes, it seems like you're, you know, going to get a lot of films as duplicates if you have a large collection. So I was kind of curious if I would just get this out of the blue, how would this turn out for me? Would I get, you know, some cool things? Because you don't kind of know what you're going to get.
That's why I'm not really.
I did some research like on the past and some of these, you know, actually, sadly, I did watch some unboxing videos. Jesus Christ, dude. It takes them like 30 minutes or an hour to do an unboxing with four movies. Jesus Christ. I can tell you about 30 movies in, you know, fucking 15 minutes. So anyways, here we go. I am going to open this up and kind of see. I haven't opened it up yet, so I am kind of excited to see exactly what this whore pack has to offer. So
I'm on pins and needles.
Yeah, I know, right? So we're going to see I own a lot of shit, and so does Sean, so we will say if we own these or not, and from this pack, from the other packs that I've seen people open, it seems like it is pretty well-versed, and they have some cool shit.
Yeah, I talked about it on the show once before when they first started.
So let's see here. I'm going to do what the YouTubers do, just put my hand in here and pull something out. So the first one is 30 Days of Night, Dark Days, which is the sequel to, of course, 30 Days of Night, which isn't too bad. Diora Baird's in this movie, so she is such – yeah, she is – I think she's gorgeous. I already own this, so this is – already own this Blu-ray. So but definitely a decent sequel, but again – I think this would be good in the pack because it seems like it would be underseen. Because I think that's kind of what this thing should kind of go for, is movies that they kind of know that maybe people have passed up in the store. Because it was 30 Days a Night to me seems like a movie like, oh yeah, I know they made a sequel to that, but I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, like, you know.
I mean, it's okay. It's an okay street to, you know, direct-to-video flick. It's more of an action flick, isn't it? If I remember, it's, they kind of treat it like...
Yeah. It's kind of an action flick.
I'd revisit it.
So, next up, another film I already own. So, we are two for two here. Wrong Turn 5, which is a... odd movie to throw in a pack since I don't know what to say, because I think it's a good title to put in there, but it's Wrong Turn 5, you know.
I've never seen any of the Wrong Turn movies, and I think I'm fine.
Yeah, so far, like, if this was the 1 month plan and I paid $24.99 for this, like I said, I don't think collectors should do this. I think if someone's trying to build their collection,
right. Yeah.
I think this would be a fun little gift. But it's fun not knowing what you're going to get. Even if you have duplicates, I don't know. It's kind of fun. All right, so next up. Whoa. Oh, they should have called this the deluxe pack. there's three movies in this set. Jesus. All right. So anyways, this is a three movies in this. It's Forget Me Not, which is a very weird horror film. Not the greatest. There's another one called House of Fallen, which I have never seen. It's Follow the Watchers, a group of fallen angels in the House of Fallen as they walk amongst Earth disguised as humans, torturing the vessels they inhabit.
Sounds awful.
Ah, okay. And then another, I've seen this cover a few times, Red Hook. And Red Hook, Jenny and her friends decipher cryptic text message clues after joining a Welcome Week scavenger hunt that isn't what it seems. That sounds kind of intriguing. It's 86 minutes. How can you go wrong with 86 minutes? So, you know, this is actually be a win for me. Because I haven't seen two of the films. I don't remember if I liked Forget Me Not. I think it was very forgettable. all right, so last but not least, let's see what we have. I have, is this a horror film? Dreamhouse? I've never seen it. I just see Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz, and Naomi Watts.
It's like a thriller. You know what I mean? A thriller.
Oh, Jim Sheridan directed. Is this a horror film?
It's more of a thriller.
Hmm. Well, I've never seen it, so there you go. That is another. All right. So, trying to assess
it.
Assess
for me,
this.
Honestly, since I have so much shit, I probably wouldn't go for it. But if this was me, like, say. When did I start really collecting horror? Because I had collected movies that hadn't really dived into collecting horror. So 10 years ago, if it was me 10 years ago, this is something I would have totally done it. Because I can get a pack, keep it I want, sell what I don't want, and pretty much be happy. But right now, it's probably either going to be stuff I already have or stuff that I just have no desire to see.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's worth it. Because, like, even for me, for an avid watcher, and you and I watch a lot of movies. So out of this, now I know not every time you're going to get a three pack, but out of this thing, I haven't seen three and a half of these films. I can't say that I've seen Forget Me Not because I literally forget everything about it. I think I'm getting it confused with another movie. What's the movie where the girl moves into an apartment and she,
discovers that somebody else was living there and something bad happened to him. So she starts having visions and like she starts ripping off like the wallpaper and discovers like this whole new thing in her house. And I thought that was called Forget Me Not, but I don't think it is. Because this is something about high school. So, okay, so I'm going to say four movies. I haven't seen four movies out of this. And I have to say, like, if I didn't own any of these, I think I would be pleased. Because, you know, I think 30 Days a Night is a film that a lot of people haven't seen. That just never got around to it. I think Wrong Turn 5 falls into that because I think people gave up. Which, don't give up on the Wrong Turn movies, people. Like, I know that sounds weird.
I never even started.
I know that sounds weird, but 1, 2, 4, and 6 are totally worth it. And 3 and 5 have their moments. And then, of course, I haven't seen these other four. So, I don't know. I think if I did it out of the blue, and, you know, I probably wouldn't do just one. I would say if you're going to do this, I wouldn't just go ahead and do the 1999 one for a month, because you're going to do it and then you're going to get maybe this if you're a collector and you're not going to be too excited. But I've seen other unboxing videos and what people have received, and there's some actually really good shit in those. Like, they give out steelbooks and stuff like that, and special collector's editions. Like, you're not going to get probably something like Pieces from Grindhouse Video. You know, Grindhouse Releasing or whatever it is. However, I think for the most part, I think maybe the best thing to do is to drop the, you know, $80 and do the 3 month and then go from there.
Yeah.
And just
you'll know by then if it's worth it or not.
Yeah. And I think that would be the best way to tell. Cause I mean, honestly, this is a really cool idea.
Yeah. I like the idea.
Yeah. Getting four movies, four Blu-rays in the mail and you have no idea what they are. I don't know. I think it's a pretty cool fucking
movie. Well, that's why people like those different box type subscription things. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of these types of things, but I hadn't seen one for movies yet, and it's a good idea. I think they, you know, if they get a good, you know, a good variety each month of really cool stuff, I think they got something. If it's just kind of standard run of the mill horror or thriller type movies, I think, you know, I think then it's kind of going to get bland. But if there has to be a reason for people to drop that money for the stuff.
Well, but here's the thing, is that this is kind of how I would also assess this, is that let's say you're in the store. Let's say you're at Walmart, you're at Best Buy, and you go to the horror section, and they're having a big sale, and all their Blu-rays are $6. You are going to be the person that goes up and picks up every movie you haven't seen for $6 because it's super cheap for a Blu-ray. We have all done it. We've all went to the $5 bin. We've all went to the $6 bin, and we pick out the films. So look at it that way.
Right.
Look at it that way, that you're going up to the wall, and you're like, okay, I haven't seen these. Because, it's cheaper than renting the fucking movie on Vudu.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's roughly what, like $6, like $6.20 probably the fucking thing.
At a random movie, yeah.
If you do the $24.99 or whatever. Yeah. So $6.25. So look at it as $6. I've been guilty of that. But I go up to a wall like on Halloween during the Walmart sales or Best Buy. They have them all for like, you know, $5, $6, $7. Yeah, you just go along and you pick up everything you haven't seen.
I hold my hand out, they all just fall into my cart.
There you go. man, that was a lot of Blu-rays you just threw in there. But I don't know. I think if you look at it that way, I think you have to be – don't be pretentious about it. Don't say all these people don't know what they're doing. Because I think it is a really cool thing, and I think that if these four movies were out and I didn't own them and they were $6 on the shelf, I would pick them all up.
Yeah.
So – I don't know. I think it's definitely worth it. Give it a shot. Yeah, I think it's a cool thing what they're doing, and hopefully it catches on, like the horror block and stuff like that.
I think the more it catches on, the more people that are
you're going to get dupes.
You're going to get cooler stuff.
You're going to get duplicates, but look at it. Take it to fucking FYE or Movie Stop or wherever that takes movies. Fucking return it to Walmart.
they'll accept anything, you know.
Yeah.
And get some money out of it.
Yeah.
Success. There you go. Now you just paid a little bit less for your whore pack.
There you go.
So I don't know. All right. Yeah, do it.
Heavy metal horror.
We have our feature interview to get to as we continue along with our Heavy Metal Horror Month. This is our final episode for Heavy Metal Horror. We got a chance to talk to Beverly and Ferd Sebastian, directors of Rocktober Blood.
This is crazy.
Alright, today's special guests, we're very excited to have them be a part of the podcast. I can't believe, Brad, I can't believe you found them, but we found the directors.
Hey, it works. I was super, super duper excited. I was blown away, and they said yes on top of it.
Well, we have the directors of Rocktober Blood, Ferd and Beverly Sebastian, on the show with us today. Welcome to the Screamcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us and even remembering us.
Well, I'm actually I watched Rocktober Blood for the first time this week. So
whoa. I envy you.
This is a movie that I've heard about for so long. Like I've said on the show, I'm a huge 80s hair metal hair band fan. I had a college radio show called Big Hair Mondays. For some reason, this movie eluded me until I had met Brad, and Brad had mentioned it, and it's been one that I had been wanting to see for quite a long time. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for this glorious film. It was a lot of fun to visit for the first time, especially that last 15 minutes, the concert scene, which is fabulous.
Oh, so good.
We had a lot of fun making it, but it's been a long time.
Last scene took half the budget.
It sure did.
Well, I know that Brad's grown up with this film. I'm going to turn it over to Brad, to you, Brad, so you can throw out the first question here.
Yeah, well, my first history of your films was being a young child in a video store and seeing the cover of Gator Bait and really, really wanting to watch that movie because there was a really, really hot girl on the front and – she didn't have a bra on, and that was a big thing for me. So eventually, I got around to renting it, and I was hooked ever since. And I saw Rocktober Blood at a young age, too. And when I was old enough to put two and two together to recognize director names, that's when, you know, I just became a total fan. So my very first question is, Rocktober Blood, 1984 – what was kind of the driving force behind making this film? Were you guys really into metal, into rock? How did that work out?
Well, let me, before I answer that question, give you a tidbit that you don't know. When you were 10 years old and saw that film Gator Bait, that little 10-year-old boy was Tracy, and that was his first starring role in a film. He later did Rocktober Blood.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It took him a while, but he learned how to talk.
We wouldn't let him talk in the film because we were afraid he couldn't remember his lines. So we made him a mute. Now, to go back to Rocktober Blood, I've always been crazy about rock and roll and heavy metal. When Tracy was 16 years old, being a good mother, I was trying to communicate with him still because he was a little bit wild. And he introduced me, as I mentioned earlier today, to Aerosmith. And I fell in love with Steven Tyler and all of the heavy metal bands of that genre. And that's sort of what we did. And I always loved horror. And I'm saying this because Ferd, as I mentioned earlier, is a George Jones type of guy. He never really could understand the rock and roll. He liked the music, could never understand the word they was playing. But so when we got ready to do, I always wanted to do a horror film. So I said, let's do a horror film this time. And that's when we decided to do the horror film and put it in rock and roll. So that's how it was born.
Awesome. Wow. Now you're
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say you made this film in a way to connect with your child in a way, is what you're saying? Like,
well,
you know,
I'm
you made.
That, I'm saying that Tracy is the star. He's Tracy Lauren. He used Trey Lauren. Okay, his real name is Trey Lauren Sebastian, but this was not a union film, and he was a member of SAG at the time. And so he couldn't do the film because we shot the film non-union. So he just used Trey Lauren as the name. And so that's who he is. But he's been in about 8 films of ours, and he has to get cast just like everybody else. We've tried a lot of people. Tried a lot of people getting somebody that I thought could both act and could do the rock and roll scene, because we knew that he had to mimic Nigel Benjamin, who did the singing. He had to do it, and I think he did one heck of a job. It like to scared me to death directing him, though, because Tracy is the type of guy that he would never rehearse in. He wouldn't put out his all in rehearsal. In other words, he just sort of stand up there and say, yang, 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 no energy or nothing. And I like to pull my hair out until I passed his bedroom one day. And I saw him in the mirror in his room rehearsing the scenes, all those movements and all that stuff, that rock and roll stuff. I saw him rehearsing it, and I thought, thank God he's going to be able to do it.
Yeah, you can watch, you know, most of the time you loop. If you are putting in another voice, you go on a stage and you loop these things and go over them and over them in one sentence and get it down pat. And he sung from beginning to the end. We never did that.
No.
We never had to go. He knew the song so well, the beats of the music so well. You can look at the... Well, if you saw the first scene where he's in front of a microphone, I've never seen a flaw in that one. He is right on the song, and the same with the ones in the end, too.
I was completely amazed that he did that in all the movements and stuff. But one thing I'll let Ferd tell you about the makeup in the film that would be interesting, because in the end scene, which is, like I say, half of our budget of the movie, Tracy had quite a thing happening, and I'll let Ferd tell you about it.
Okay, on the end scene, we have the killer coming in out in the open, and they think he's Billy Eye. He's really his brother. But anyway, with the makeup on there, the last scene, he gets electrocuted. He has another skin right over his skin. And under that, they have little plastic tubes.
For veins.
And so you can't see him when he's just up there singing, but when he comes up to that scene, they hook him up, and it's a pump that a special effects man handles. So as he's getting electrocuted, he can pulse those, and you'll see the veins in his face start moving, and up to a point where he bursts them, and then that's when he starts hitting blood down his face. Well, we also, to add sparks to it, we put little charges taped to his chest and shoulders, and they could set them off when they were supposed to go off. So the one right in the middle of his chest, they're padded on the backside, and the charge goes out forward. Well, when they did the one on the front of him, it fired backwards instead of forward. Oh. So it fired right into his chest.
It imploded.
It imploded instead of exploded. And so we never knew this because he didn't stop singing.
The music was going. The show was going with one take.
And he was going.
Wow.
And then we got through it. As soon as we said cut, he was ripping his shirt off and trying to get this fire out on his chest. And we said, "Why didn't you just say cut?" And he says, "I'm not going to sit in that makeup room for another 3 hours putting another face on."
He said. He told us. He said, "Mom, I told you it was going to be a one take shot, so don't miss it." And that's what it was. I think he did a terrific job.
Wow.
Even looking back at the film today.
Oh,
so
man.
Anyway, that's part of the fun we had.
No, that's great. I mean, that ends that. Like I said, the last 15 minutes of that movie, I was just grinning ear to ear. And then how the movie ends is just perfect in my opinion for this type of film.
Well, I thank you. I thank you for that because that's the first rock and roll concert I ever put on.
Yeah,
I said if I ever came back, I'd like to be a rock and roll producer. I would love to have done those in my lifetime.
Oh yeah. No, that's pretty fantastic. But the thing that I love about this film in particular is we've seen a lot of horror movies, especially slasher films that all take place in one location. It's pretty much, you know, there's a few locations here and there, but this one has a specific kind of, in a way, like a first act, middle act, and then final act in three kind of distinct locations. There's the beginning in the studio, then it ends up in the cabin for a bit, and then we get to, you know, the concert hall, and then the concert itself. And I really like that. I like it when a movie, no matter what the budget, the movie goes out of its way to kind of take me to distinct areas, you know, and kind of take you through a journey with the characters. And this one, it kind of, maybe that was a way of stretching the budget dollar, but it made it feel, I think, bigger than it was. Was that intentional or was that just, you know?
Oh, you know, that was to save money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was to save money.
I'll go over the sets with you real quick.
Yeah.
The recording studio is the record plant in Los Angeles. Okay. So that's where we recorded. But then
the house or cabin, as you said.
But the, well, go from there. From the record plant, they walk off out of the control room and she goes and takes a jacuzzi.
Mm-hmm.
That's in my home in Los Angeles in an atrium. So that she walks into there and that does the jacuzzi scene.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other girl that gets nailed to the wall out there in that first scene, that is in the studio that we rented to do the final scene in.
To do the concert scene in.
So that's where that is. Now then.
The cabin.
the cabin is Beverly and I's house in Lake Tahoe. So we just use the whole house in Lake Tahoe to do that scene. And the speedboat on the lake. Well, that's our speedboat on the lake. So we just.
But I'll tell you something. Remember, wasn't that the one we had the scene where our, what's your name?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we had two scenes in my house in Tahoe, which caused me to sell the house. One was when she comes up out of the.
He comes up
out of the jacuzzi and grabs her. One scene, and then the scene where he opens the closet door and he comes out. That was my bedroom closet door, and to this day, I don't think I can walk back into that house without being petrified of him coming out at me.
Yeah, we had that jacuzzi's on a lower level of that house, and when Tracy found out something that he could do in that thing, is you put the air jets on, so it'll bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he could lay down in the jacuzzi and breathe. It sucked in the air. It's coming out of the air jet. So we did that almost all in one long scene.
Wow.
We come into the killer's POV and the thing's bubbling and there's no cuts in there until he comes over to the side to get in the jacuzzi and then he comes up out there and grabs her. I don't know if anybody gets that time in there that it took that he was underwater.
Wow!
Because they probably thought we cut somewhere, but we really didn't.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's insane, but awesome.
One of the things that we had, our reputation in the business was always putting the money on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that I can tell any independent producer, put the money on the screen, and we had a real knack for doing that. Even though they were low budget, they would look like they cost a lot more money than they did.
Mm-hmm.
So don't forget that concert scene. It doesn't compare to the Hollywood vampires on the Grammys the other night. Which we'll do in our new show, the sequel, but it still came out pretty good.
I think so. I mean, Brad, do you have any?
The one thing I was more concerned, because you said you were always kind of, you know, your son introduced you to Aerosmith and you're kind of, you know, you really like this genre. How did you get Sorcery to actually do the music for this?
Well, Ben, our older son, found, he was in charge of music production, and he found them. I think Kevin Eddy was a friend of his, and he was Rod Stewart's guy.
Engineer.
And so we found them that way.
He was our engineer on that music, too.
He was the engineer on the music, too. That's how we got them. And then back to the genre of rock and roll, Tracy again found a film in Cannes, at the Cannes Festival, AC/DC Let There Be Rock, that everybody turned down, and every distributor turned it down except us, and we brought it over here and created a special event out of the film and we sold it a number of places on special event handling, and then we made a deal with Warner Brothers and went across the country with them doing the same thing. But he's always been into that rock genre, and that allows us the entree into that. He'll be available for a interview if you want to set that up. He's down here visiting us, and so he'll be available if you want to talk to him sometime too.
Oh, that'd be excellent. Yeah. Sorcery is actually still around, which is crazy as well. Yeah, they're still kicking it. They're still making music. A lot heavier now, but
I talked to Terry a couple of days ago. He's working with us on this new re-release.
That is, that's something else I wanted, because you mentioned that, and I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that on the show or not. So you are, now is this going to be kind of a theatrical run, or how are you guys going about the re-release of Rocktober Blood? Because I'm going to tell you right now, people are going to be stoked about this.
Well, they're really going to be happy. Planned, and then I'm going to give you a briefing, and then I'm doing an interview with Trey Sutter, because he's really in charge of that. We're going to release first the DVD. We're going on Indiegogo, a campaign to help us raise some of the money. But we're going to do a DVD. Then if we can get our negative back from one of the distributors, we're going to make a Blu-ray. From that, after that release, we're going to, in October, have a Rocktober Blood Festival in selected cities around the country, possibly four or five. We're going to go in, and we're going to put on a special event showing where Tracy will make a live appearance. We're going to have the wall of sound like we had in the AC/DC film, and going into selected theaters. And then after that, Tracy intends to go in and do the sequel. He and Ben will be producing the sequel to Rocktober Blood, Billy's Revenge.
If we finally have
we get the money, if we've got the audience, right.
My head just blew up. Like, I just exploded. Like, that was just – that was so much information. Like, I don't know what to be happy about first.
He can tell you in detail because we've been working it out, as we go step by step. We didn't know anything about this thing being a cult. I've been into Greyhounds and Ferg's been into Christianity, and we've sort of left this sinful way of living behind us. But anyway, we're going to take the sinful money and do God's work with it.
Well, you know what? It is a cult classic, and it is loved. It is one of the, I don't know. There's a few of the, you know, of this subgenre, heavy metal horror, like Trick or Treat and Rock and Roll Nightmare, Black Roses, which we've actually spoke to filmmakers all involved with those films. I think this is another one that could stand up there. It's just that, you know, it just had a VHS release, and that's pretty much it. You know, so I think a resurgence is needed for this film.
Well, it appears that there is an audience out there. My grandson discovered this and started telling us about it, and then got Tracy involved, and we started researching. And there is quite a following. If they like it and want to see more, well, he'll be able to revive it and have a lot of fun doing it. It's a lot of fun to do the rock and roll, and the new film will have a lot more rock and roll in it than the first one, but we'll also have a good story with it. Because Billy Eye, I'm not going to tell you what he does, but he does some real interesting things. People are going to love. He's been in prison a few years, and he's had time to think.
Wow. Awesome. Like, I'm sweating right now. I don't even know what to say.
I wanted to kind of get back to that Costa scene really quick. Did you – because those last 15 minutes of Rocktober Blood are basically a rock, you know, a filmed rock concert. Did you guys treat it that way? You know, how many nights did it? Was it a few consecutive nights? How did you approach shooting that scene?
Like I said, we did that one scene, a one take, buddy. That's a one shot take. That Tracy was tired. He had all that mess on him.
Yeah.
And that thing imploded. I mean, that was a one take, boy.
We had a little audience in there.
The whole audience and everything, that was they started playing, you guys were shooting on a couple cameras, or?
I'm sorry, what?
Well, as far as the concert footage, was it just, here we're going to go through these three songs, and did you capture it as it happened?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We did the whole concert when we rented a stage. And we did the whole concert right there. We set up the stage. We did all the lights, the decorations, everything, set it up. And then we had – didn't we have a small audience there?
Yes.
We had a small audience.
We had –
But then Tracy, I mean, it was a one-shot deal.
The only break we took we took a break to get Tracy wired up for the instinct.
Wired up for the instinct.
Matter of fact, that was really – we went through to the end scene, and then the audience and all left, and we just did the ending where he got electrocuted.
Okay.
With just us there.
Wow.
Like I say, it was one. Most of our films, if you do low budget, if you take more than three takes, buddy, you've had it.
Right.
One to cover, one reel, and one in case something happens to the camera.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like that, there's such an. And there's an energy to that scene that, you know, that it felt completely real. I mean, it felt like you just turned on the camera and watched a concert. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I used to tour with bands and things like that, and I love live performance, you know, seeing bands playing everything.
That's what he did.
And that was just –
We turned on the film, hit the music, and away he went.
Man.
Thank you, Lord. if I had not snuck up on him and seen him rehearsing in front of that mirror, I would have probably had a heart attack because I knew it was the one take, and he just did a terrific job.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
So anyway, that was good.
Yeah. So
I'm glad the kids love it.
I'm very curious. I mean, Brett. I'm very curious about how, because you guys stopped doing films in '93 or '94. Right?
93. Yeah, 93. We retired for the third time.
What?
Only this time we moved to Florida.
Right. So what sparked your interest in, because I know you've been doing this, is it Greyhound Rescue? Is it more of a, you're using Greyhounds with prisoners. What started that journey into that? Because that's really fascinating, moving from the film industry to more of a nonprofit.
We moved from Los Angeles, California to Homosassa, Florida. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Homosassa, but it's a little town on the river. And leaving Los Angeles and coming down here, I thought I would go insane. So I got interested. We found a dog at the vets over here, and it was a greyhound. And I started writing a story. I thought, I'm going to make a movie. I had a contract with Paramount to do another film. And I said, I'm going to make a movie on greyhounds. And I became interested in them, got involved in their plight, formed the foundation in 94. And I've been doing it for 21 years.
Wow.
The Second Chance at Life prison program we've been doing for 6 years. And it is the most most unique program there is in the marketplace. In fact, we just released a recidivism report. If you don't know what recidivism is, it's when people get out of prison and how many come back after they've been through the program. And we had zero returns.
Wow.
So now we're talking to the state of Florida about possibly putting it in all the prisons in Florida, because we saved over the last 5 years over $3.5 million the state of Florida just by keeping prisoners out. And the Greyhounds and God are the reason this program is successful.
That's incredible.
They're trying to, in the Senate right now, they're trying to pass another bill for the umpteenth time to stop Greyhound racing here. And that's fine if they want to stop it, but they got to decouple it in a timely manner. They can't do it at one time because they'll kill 10,000 dogs
right. In
no time at all. So we're pushing to decouple it. If they want to decouple, which means separate the dogs from the gambling, that's fine. But they've got to be responsible for these dogs and get them in homes and give groups like myself time to get them adopted.
We're talking about
$10,000.
Well, $10,000 on the track and $10,000 on the farm. So we're really talking about $20,000. It will be immediately gone. So we have to eat that number of dogs or just have them put down.
But I never have been involved in causes. I've always been just involved in the movie business. And we've done a lot of movies with the Greyhound. But it started. I never have made the film that I'd like to make that started the Greyhound Foundation, which was a film called Happy, Run, Happy, Run. And I've never made it, so maybe one day the kids will make it when I'm gone, and you can talk about that.
What do you do with the Greyhounds and the prisoners? How does that work? Do they get a dog to take care of, or how does that, that specific thing
work? We had back 7 or 8 years ago, they were killing so many of them, I didn't have any place to put them, so I was looking for a foster home and came up with the idea based on some other people had done it. I just took it national. I think of everything national anyway. So I put the Greyhounds in prison. We take them from the track, take them to the prison, and the program begins teaching prisoners how to become dog trainers. After 6 months, they're capable of becoming their own dog trainer. We don't have to send a professional in with them. Now these people are as good or better than the professionals because the dogs live with them 24/7. They live in a dorm together. They take care of the dogs, and every 10 weeks we have a graduation. Our next one's coming up March the 11th. And we graduate the dogs. Then we work with partners and send them to homes to be adopted around the country. But the prisoners, what's so good, it started out as a dog program because I'm a dog person, but it became such a program for both men and women of teaching parenting, anger management, how to get along with people, being a member of a team, things that they're never allowed to do in prison. This program allows them to do. And now we're going outside. When they get out, we help them get jobs. We keep up in touch with them. We have Facebook that we have social media to help them try to readjust to life. And that's, I think, why they're coming out.
Wow.
And some of them have gone into ministry. And God, like I said, no one knows what the real secret is, but that is the secret of the program.
We don't push it on anybody. We've had Muslims in. We've had all types of people in. And it all works out. So we don't force anybody to do anything. Mm-hmm. They take what they want, and really about 99.9% of them come out Christians because they found that really works in their life, particularly in there.
Yeah, they have to have an answer. They have to have hope and forgiveness. And I tell them when they go in with these dogs, I said, you'll find this Greyhound is the closest thing to God you'll find on earth. He forgives you for anything you do. He cares nothing about anything you've ever done. He doesn't judge you or anything. And I think that's why the prisoners really communicate, especially with Greyhounds.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, Brad and I are definitely dog lovers. And so when I saw that you guys were doing this, I was just kind of blown away. That it's like, wow, that's a really incredible, change from Hollywood
to
this.
You're invited. you're invited to come up with me and go to graduation sometime if you'd like. I'd be get you cleared and you'd have a ball. You would be absolutely amazed. We're taking a couple up with us next in on the 11th.
Wow.
And
fun fact, you only live about 30 minutes away from me.
Brad, you should go.
Yeah, I know. I noticed you live in Lakeland, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I saw that tonight.
I'm too far away. I'm in Southern California, but one of these days.
Well, hey, don't worry. I go out to Southern California every now and then. I'm bringing California down to me next week. My great granddaughter is coming down. I'll get to meet her the first time.
Oh, nice.
That's
okay.
That's Tracy's grandchild.
Nice. So, Brad, I apologize if you have anything to ask, Brad, interject by all means.
Oh no. One question I have is that. You know, obviously, you guys have been married for a long time. But how did working together, basically on every film, develop, and how did that work?
It's very simple. Are you married?
No, I'm not. But I have a life partner, basically.
If you ever do, you let her think she's the boss, and she lets you think you're the boss.
That way, everybody's happy.
Truthfully, what we really do with it is that we work very well together, and we think much along the same lines. I'm a number one cinematographer, and I direct through the camera on most of the shows. Beverly directed on this show. She directed on a couple of shows, both teenage shows, because she understands them better than I do. Like I say, I'm the George Jones guy. If they don't get in line, knock them in the head. Okay. But anyway, but she is the business end. Now, on most shows, I'm the director, and that is the final word. Whatever, if I cut a scene, if I put a scene in, if I want to do it this way, want to do it that way, we'll discuss it, but I'm the final word. Now then, we're going to sell the picture. Now it goes to her. I'd go to Cannes in France and give the girls away, and she's over there saying, No, shut up. I want to take $10,000. I mean, she wants $30,000 for it. You know.
He doesn't know how to sell. He doesn't understand when you're working with Middle Easterners and stuff, you never get what you ask for.
No, they really like to barter. It's like they're selling rugs or something. They really like to barter. And so the first year, we didn't sell too much. The next, say we had a show that we wanted to sell for $15,000 to one territory. Now we learned we went over there and we wanted $30,000 or $40,000 for that. And then they would try to cut us down. We're like, I'm dying, I'm dying. Anyway, so they get us down to maybe 22,000, which is 7,000 more than we wanted for it. But they're happy and we're happy because they got to do all this dealing.
Right.
Well, that's how we've been together. We celebrate our 63rd anniversary on March 12th.
Whoa. Well, congratulations.
We're going to celebrate up at the prison with the girls on the day before. And like I say, he's boss of one thing and I'm boss of the other. That gives each of us in the partnership a chance to excel and get satisfaction for something we do.
We go to the prison and we share everything equally. She takes care of the dogs and I take care of the girls.
Right. Don't you put that on radio.
Oh, that's great.
So how did you guys get into the filmmaking business?
We got into the filmmaking business because Ferd always liked photography. After he was in the service, he liked photography, and we did from there to television commercials in Houston. And then from television commercials, we started doing shorts, and we met a guy that came down to do a movie from Hollywood, and he hired us to do a documentary of him doing it. And Ferd, after we watched him, he says, I can make movies better than that. And I said, well, let's make movies. And so that's what we did. We just started from scratch and didn't know our head from our tail and got us some books and learned and studied.
We always used our own money. If you have a young audience out there that would like to do something, this is the most fantastic time in the world to do it.
Yeah.
But we got video cameras now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was going with 35 millimeter film right from the beginning. And you shoot that and there's no erasing it. You've shot it, it's either good or it's bad. And you spend a lot of money. This, you shoot it in videotape, you don't like it, just rewind it, do it over again.
It's a fantastic time for young filmmakers.
And you can get some really good cameras for really a reasonable price when you're thinking about doing this type of work.
Well, there's that film, Tangerine, that was filmed on an iPhone.
Yeah.
You can do that. I mean, and like I've told, a lot of, I told these kids, get out there and do it. Set yourself a goal and do it. You can. It's a wonderful time. And you don't even need to go find a distributor like we had to. That's how come we had to distribute our own film until we made a deal with Paramount and Warner Brothers. Nobody wanted our film for any money. Now you can put your, you can become your own distributor like Puppet Master on YouTube. You can become your own distributor.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a marvelous time for people.
Wow.
What else you want to know?
Well, what I want to know, I mean, because a lot of people, you know, when they find, I come from a really strong, like, Christian background. So that's something I'm always, whenever I hear someone has that going on, I'm always very interested because I was raised in a strong Christian family. So now I was kept from and discouraged from watching horror movies and listening to heavy metal and things like that. So because of that, I, of course, became attracted to heavy metal and horror and things like that. And a lot of people, when they do have a life change, when they do become, you know, born again Christian or whatever, they, you know, kind of don't want to talk about their past or things like that, or they try to just shove it behind and have it disappear. Yeah. It sounds like you guys, on the other hand, the difference is, want to hear from you guys is you guys actually embrace that as a part of your, you know, as your background, which is fantastic. How
it's part of our journey through life, and it's also where Ferg is today in his ministry, and where I am today is on the back of the re-release of Rocktober Blood and all of our films that are coming out. So if they don't want to see it, they don't have to, but it is there.
I'll give you a quick thing. You can cut out if you want to. You asked me why we stopped making movies in 1993.
Yes, sir.
I had a heart attack. The doctor said that I had 10 days to live. And if they gave me an operation, I'd probably die on the operating table. It just looked like no way out for me. And I was going back to Paramount, and we were making our last movie, which was Running Cool. And I was going back there, and a voice came to me and said, Jesus is the answer. That was it, three words. When I got to the studio, Beverly was there, and my older son was there, and I asked if they'd go out on a vacant soundstage with me and pray. I'm not a big prayer, hadn't been a big prayer, didn't know what to pray, didn't know what to claim, what to say, anything. I went out there, and Ben held behind me, and Beverly held my hand, and I just said, Jesus, please heal me. And there was a snap in my chest, and I was healed. Hmm. Went back to the doctors, and he said he wanted to take me into the hospital to operate on me. I said, I don't need to. I have perfect circulation. So he gave me another test, and he says, you're right. He says, you have perfect circulation. But he says, I can't believe that Jesus healed you. I said, well, I don't care. That's what I believe. And he says, well, I still can't believe that. I can believe one thing. I says, what's that? He says, you have perfect circulation. So that's been 28 years ago, something like that. And so we retired down here, and Running Cool is my last theatrical film, but I've been making some films for Beverly and on the Greyhounds. And I started a website, and it's called tojesus.org.
At the end, we'll tell them.
Okay. But anyway, on that, what I was going to tell you, because you came from a religious background, and I...
How'd you like to live with us?
You came from a religious background, and I came from a motion picture background. And so I found out one thing. Religion is not it.
Jesus.
Religion is not it. What it is a personal relationship with Jesus. That's all it's all about.
That's what we tell these girls in prison that I think makes so much difference. And the men also. We have men in prisons in Arizona and up in Michigan and in Indiana and Ohio. And that's where so many of these guys have gotten out and been able to stay out. Because we tell them what our journey through our life is, what we've been through sin and raised in hell and having a great time in our 20s and 30s. 40, 50, we got a little holy because third-faced death. And in October, I had a massive heart attack. And it didn't damage my heart, but it gave me 5 stents. And Ferd couldn't let me get away with that. A week or two later, they have to put him in the hospital, and he gets 5 stents. So he couldn't let me get ahead of him, but now we're doing great. And then Tracy came down here to take care of us, so... Tracy, he hates me calling him that. He will always be Tracy. He likes to be Trey. Okay? So don't steam. He's probably steaming behind me. But anyway, that's a mama's prerogative.
Oh, man. Well, that's, you know, I'm always fascinated by people's journeys. And it's great that you guys are embracing your films and talking about them with us. You know, we're huge fans of October Blood. I don't think I've seen the other. I've known of Gator Bait, but I haven't seen it. Brad,
Gator Bait, I'm Running Cool, The Hitchhikers, The Single Girls. They're all like, you guys had like a certain, I don't even know what to call it, because it's just this really like gritty. Like I would say maybe probably up to, Gator Bait. You guys had this like really like grungy, like dirty looking tones to your films, but they gave it like a sense of realism, and that's why I always kind of attracted to those films.
We couldn't afford to buy too many lights.
a couple of the early ones before Gator Bait was The Hitchhikers.
Yeah, The Hitchhikers,
That was a fun film.
Then we did Single Girls, and then we did Flash of the Firecat.
That was a fun one.
That was a fun movie. And it was
Captain Midnight. Tracy
Captain
was
Midnight.
Started,
Tracy started was the star of that. That's a teenage picture on a pirate radio station. He played. We got some good music in that. We got Cat Scratch Fever and a couple of more. We got some
Maggie May.
We kind of got in a little bit with that crowd because Ben's friend, Kevin Eddie, he's passed away now, but he was the engineer for these groups. Hmm. And so we just get to use some of their music.
In the trade, our pictures, you're right. In the trade, they were recognized as a Sebastian film. If we took our films to Cannes, we didn't have to put the thing on somebody in the audience and say, that's a Sebastian film. There was a look that we had about him. I've always called it what we consider the McCall's lighting. When we were in still photography, we could only afford one light. Hmm. And we used an umbrella, and we would use that one light source, and it seemed to have followed over on our photography, because Ferd was always in lighting and cinematography. So it sort of followed over that natural look that we used.
Of course, Time Magazine had another name for us. They did a story on it many years ago, and they called us the Ma and Pa Kettle of the movie business.
Because what you see is what you get. We've always been down home, whether we were in Cannes, France, or whether we were in Hollywood or in Homosassa. So
well, you can't beat that. I mean, that's, you know,
nope.
I can respect that for sure.
We've been all totally. Over everywhere. We've had a good time doing it. And now we're sharing that, like I say, with the girls in prison. That's what our whole story is.
Wow.
We share our journey through life with them, and hopefully some of them it's saving and giving them a chance to do something with their life. They'll have a second chance.
That's awesome.
So that's what we're doing.
Truly amazing the journey you guys had and the films that you've done, and also inspired a lot of people, because I know a lot of people that love Gatorbait and Rocktober Blood, and you know, they idolize those films, and I've always you know, done so as well, even Gatorbait 2. But anyways, yeah, it just I think it's truly great because you guys have had a long, long journey and accomplished a lot of things and have made a difference in many people's lives, whether it be inspiring people in movies or, you know, inspiring people to do better with their lives. So, yeah, I truly think what you guys are doing is magical. So I'm glad you were we were able to have you part of this show.
Well, we thank you for inviting us.
Yeah.
Thanks for accepting.
So where can people find everything that you guys are doing?
Okay, if they're looking for Jesus, they can go on Third's website at tojesus.org, and they can talk to him and see all the fantastic work he does. Over 1 million people a year visit him from all over the world.
Wow.
That shows you they like Jesus more than they do my dogs. So anyway, on the Greyhound, you can go to giveasecondchance.com, or if you want to know about the service dogs for our veterans, you can go to purpleheartgreyhounds.org, and he'll tell you about Facebook because I don't deal with that stuff at all.
The only thing that's happening on Rocktober Blood right now is Facebook, and it's Facebook/Rocktober Blood.
Right. That just started two days ago. We just opened a new page.
Wow, okay.
Telling about the release, and that's where you can find information on that.
Okay.
You can visit Ferg. You can go to Facebook and visit Ferg Sebastian. And you can do me, but you'll never hear from me because I don't go on to it about once every year.
I follow my Facebook page.
Her does all the time.
She just works too hard.
And
it really is hard. It's,
hey, I got 20-some babies in a prison I got to take care of and make sure they're okay. And my God, have you ever thought about that? I used to have 70 and 100. I've cut it down. I've only got 20-some now.
We cut it down from probably close to 200.
Wow.
I saved almost 9,000 greyhounds.
Wow.
Wow.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
9,000.
It's amazing. I mean, really, what you guys are doing is just fantastic, and it's you know, to make a difference in people's lives like that is great, and I'm inspired, man.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, inspired. Ferg will be 80. I'm old. 80 what?
I just say 80 something. 80 something.
In July, and I'll be 81 on mine, and we say, what do they say, orange is the new black? We're saying 80 is the new 60.
There you go. There you go. Well, it truly is a pleasure to speak with you both about all this, and we definitely wish you all the best with these nonprofit stuff that you're doing and for your ministry stuff. I mean, we really wish you guys all the best with all this. And, I mean, shoot, there's more Rocktober Blood to be had. So that's exciting.
I've been on this thing, looking on this internet of us. I thought, my God, where did these people get all this information from? they know more about me than I do.
Oh, man.
They don't know the budget on Rocktober Blood. They do know the budget on Gatorbait. You know what the budget was?
I have no idea, but I would like to know.
Brad, did you know what the budget was?
I have no idea, but I'm anxious to know.
The budget on Gatorbait was $90,000. It made over $15
million. Wow.
You hear what I said?
Yeah, I am all ears. I'll sit and listen to stories all night.
Tell all these kids out there they can do the same thing. It's all hard work. It's still what in America is good, and everybody, we've got the American way. We can do it.
That's right.
But don't forget, Jesus has got to be the way.
I could have been the best.
Well, that was an interview with Beverly and Ferd Sebastian, directors and writers of Rocktober Blood, and some other things. There's some movies I want to check out now.
Man, that, Running Cool, Gator Bait, Do It All.
If you, I'm going to put a link to their Facebook. It's facebook.com/Rocktoberblood. So keep an eye out. They're going to be having some announcements there, if they haven't already, about a possible Rocktober Blood DVD. And then it should be leading into, hopefully, what did they say in the interview? Them getting the rights to the
negative,
the actual negative, so they can actually do a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So once we get full-on information, that we'll be tweeting the shit out of it, putting it on the, we'll be putting it on our the website and Facebook and everything, and we'll go from there. But this would be really fun to see like a collector's edition style Blu-ray. So whatever it takes to get that to happen, I'm all in. So yeah. I'll be checking out this on DVD, and even if it's just a DVD, this is a fantastic, really fun.
Well, it's a it's only been released on VHS once, and look it up on eBay. The VHS is like $100.
Yeah,
yeah. So you know,
either way, it's a win.
Definitely worth it.
Totally. So man, that was a really fun interview. I got took some turns. Didn't think we were going to be talking some good old-fashioned religion, but it was good, man. I have a huge respect for them. So we'll have all the links to their websites and their websites in the show notes as well. All right, now it's time to do a drawing. We've been kind of hyping this up all month long. This is a drawing for, we got some sample packs of Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee. We got an official Screamcast mug, and that's pretty much that's the package. Some stickers and buttons and stuff like that will be thrown in there. So you're gonna get some Screamcast merch and some awesome coffee, and so I think it's worth it, right?
Hey, 100%, 100%.
So here we go. I have a Boba Fett hat.
You're not doing it in your fedora?
Nope, I say Boba Fett baseball cap that I got from Disneyland.
Disney.
Which is basically turning into Star Wars land. All right, here we go. I grabbed one out of the hat. Here we go. Steve Johnson.
Oh, is that the guy that sounded fucking scary on the
yes,
on the dog thing?
Yes.
Steve, you can't win, man. Well, no, I don't want to tell him that because he's fucking scary.
Steve, man, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for interacting with the show so much, too. He interacts with us quite a bit, and we are definitely enjoy hearing from him all the time.
That's the zombie killer 79 or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And I want to thank all of you for participating. So basically, this is how the drawings are going to work. I think we're going to do one a month. And if you buy something from our sponsors or anyone that we're plugging on the show, and we'll let you know on each show. And it will basically, if you support them or whoever we're talking about and support our sponsors and email us, readme@thescreamcast.com with the transaction. You will be entered into the drawing, and we'll do a drawing once a month. And there'll be more stuff than just coffee. I want to try to get some. Maybe some. We can talk some companies into giving us some giveaways. So I would like to up the giveaways.
Anything is possible, Sean.
And I think we have enough contacts now that we can probably make something happen. So Steve, we'll be dropping you a line, or you drop us a line when you hear this. And congratulations, and thank you to all of you who participated. I mean, this was the biggest drawing ever we've had so far, so a lot of fun. I mean, we haven't done one in a while, but this is a lot of fun to see the emails and everything you guys sent in. So thank you for...
What did he do? What did he... do you know what he likes?
He supported Tex Montana.
Yes. Yes.
And he got the Blu-ray package, so he dropped some cash.
Good for you. Because if you didn't, I wouldn't have said anything, because, you know.
By the time you guys listen to this, it's the end. We're at the end for the Tex Montana Kickstarter campaign. So
When does it end?
What day does it end?
Like 3 days.
So by the time you're hearing this, it could either just be ending or have ended already. If it's just ending, please, if you haven't supported the Tex Montana Kickstarter, please do. Help them get that. At this time we're recording, they're about 10 grand away from hitting their goal, and they're super close, and I would love to see them really successful with this. So, anyway, all right. So that's going to do it for that. Let me keep this here so I know who.
Because I can say this now because it's already over. But did you know that people can pull their pledge? Like,
Yes, I saw that.
But you can, like, so basically.
Don't pull any pledges, people.
You could go up to a Kickstarter and donate, like, you know, $2,000. Because it doesn't take it right away. It's not Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. And then when they're down to, like, an hour, you can pull it and they won't meet their goal. How insane is that?
That's like, basically dick like, move of the year. If
like, I understand.
That.
Like, it makes sense because you can cancel. You're like, oh, fuck. You know, maybe you had some financial trouble. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, the people we found out were dicks or you didn't like what they were doing. But, dude, like, that could, like, people that have honest campaigns like this one, like, goddamn, dude. I mean, there's got to be some checking and stuff like that for people that actually do that, because you could just have somebody going around donating, like, $10,000 and then polls. I'm pretty sure you'd catch them pretty quick. But, dude, like, like, what if you, like, donated to, like, $2,000 and then
it's
you,
like, the ultimate, like, punch in the balls.
Decreased it to a dollar. See, that's the thing is, like, you know, what if you're really anticipating, like, something coming out and you're being really generous and it's, like, $250 and then you turn around a week later, the people are like, oh, man, they're, like, $10 away from their goal. So you decrease it down to, like, $5 because they already met it. Like, what the fuck, dude?
Like, oh, shit.
How much size? Like, I've never
I always thought you were just locked in.
Yeah,
dude, we shouldn't even be talking about this. We're going to give people ideas. You know, but our listeners aren't total dickbags.
No, so. We don't have any total dickbags, so some of them are dickbags.
Well, we've had some interactions with a few dickbags here and there. I'm not going to lie.
it's just really odd. Now I understand why people do Indiegogo.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like, I was always thinking, like, man, no one wants to do Indiegogo because the money, like, people just take the money and run. But that's, like, they're really, like, both of them have their, like, perks and, you know, the good things about them. Like, I don't know, man. If I would ever do it, I would do Indiegogo because I wouldn't trust Kickstarter changing. So,
it's a tough call.
Damn. Anyways. Right, but, yeah, it makes sense. If you can increase your pledge, you could obviously decrease it.
Yeah.
And if you can't, you can cancel it. So, damn. But anyways, they are officially $8,200 in 3 days. I think they'll do it.
I think so. I think they'll do it, man. So. Pretty pumped about it. All right. Well, man, that's going to do it for Heavy Metal Horror, man. I think we had a pretty cool month.
I think we had an amazing month. Like, all four shows, all, like, top-notch guests, people that really aren't interviewed. Like, we fucking found – I found the fucking – I'm not to gloat or fucking toot my own horn, but I fucking found the screenwriter for Black Roses. Yeah. How fucking cool is that shit? And she said yes. Like, it is cool that everybody, like – you know, we reached – I'll be personal on the show. I reached out to actually you know, because when we're doing this, when we're constructing something like this, we did happy anniversary, Sean, for two years of Screamcast.
Smooches,
but last year in February, we did Blaxploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though I don't regret doing those episodes, the reason why I did those episodes is because I really tried to get guests that were on.
Yeah.
You know, I put a lot of things out there and a lot of, you know, some people didn't respond and a lot of people, you know,
said no, or they were like, oh, let's schedule something, and then, you know, it just never worked out. Yeah. So I'm very fortunate to actually have a bunch of guests, but in order to do this, you know, you just can't reach out to one person. You have to reach out to multiple people.
Yeah.
And then you have to see what's going to stick and what's going to fall. And then you also have to say, you know what, I'm sorry, like, we'll just do something else at another time, you know, because you also don't want to overlap and have, you know, 10 shows on heavy metal horror and talk about Black Roses three times. So, but anyways, you know, very fortunate to have, Stacey Cusack helped me a lot with the John Michael Thor interview.
Yeah.
McBeardo was, it was a fucking cinch. I just said, hey, man, you want to be on the show? Yeah, sure. That was the extent of that. Like, that was no problem. You know, trying to track down people like Cindy Sorrell for Black Roses, that was a little tough, you know, because you have to take into account that some of these people aren't active, so you just have to randomly message them on Facebook. And, you know,
is that what you did to Cindy?
Yeah. And I just sent her a message, and, you know, it's one of those things where you know how Facebook Messenger works.
Oh,
if you're not friends with the person, it stays in this, like, you know, this limbo in a mailbox until they accept.
Right.
So you have a lot of that. I actually had a few. I had the lead star of Black Roses that I was trying to get a hold of. I had Mark Price, who plays Ragman, Trick or Treat, that I was trying to get. You know, the guys from Deathgasm I tried to get.
And we almost had that, too. It was just scheduling conflict.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, a lot of things didn't work out. And the coolest thing about and this is a story about the Sebastians, how I got them on the show, is that, you know, I contacted – I tried contacting them through their website because, you know, I remember the Gator Bait movies were put out by themselves. And I was like, oh, shit. So I went to their website, PanamaFilms.com, and I, you know, wrote them an email. Well, it was like 2 weeks I didn't hear anything. So I was like, fuck, that's not going to work. So a bunch of my friends came over and, you know, I showed them Gator Bait. Movie was over. We're just, you know, relaxing. And out of the blue, my buddy Dave says, what's the special features? So I click on it and there's a video promoting their Greyhounds. And I was like, what? Like, they're doing Greyhound? I had no idea. You know, I just thought it was the movies and, you know, it was it. You know, talking about religion was the stuff we talked about on the show. And I'm like, this is crazy. And they're from Florida. So I go to the website and there's an email. I email them the Greyhound thing.
That's
and
amazing,
I'm like,
man.
Hey guys, I know you're like in the Jesus and, you know, working with prisoners at Greyhounds, but want to come talk about a horror film and your, you know, your skin flicks that you did?
Yes.
Dude, embraced it in a heartbeat.
That's what I loved about it, man.
They're so sweet. They gave me their phone numbers. I give them a call.
They're fantastic.
The fucking nicest people. Yeah. And they're like so down to earth and becomes one of the coolest interviews that we've had.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, you know, and it just, I'm really appreciative of, you know, people that, I don't know, like, you haven't been in the business for a long time. You know, you're maybe burnt out on all the questions, or maybe you just don't, you know, you just don't care. You just don't have the time but I mean, people are so accepting, to the show. Cause I mean, we don't fucking make a dime off of this thing. So it's nothing for us. It's all about promotion for, you know, cause we've promoted countless things, you know, Kickstarters, Indiegogos, passion projects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it's all about, just to help out, spread the word.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a really great month with a lot of people that were very appreciative. And I think that's what I liked about it a lot.
Yeah.
Is that some of our guests have mentioned, you know, emailed me back, or, you know, Cynthia has messaged me a few times, and her kids, you know, messaged me saying, hey, it's really cool you have my mom on. I was like, you know, it's part of, like, we're very family oriented. Fucking Noah's on the show half the time, you know, and I'm really appreciative of what we've built. And of course you, Sean, because you've always, you know, we make a good team, and it's just a very nice family we've built. And I think this month truly shows what we've, you know, what we're all about and what we accomplished.
Yeah. This is fun. I would love to try to organize more kind of themes like this. Maybe we do it a few times a year or something like that. We'll figure it out.
I think it really worked out.
Success.
because we actually talked about that. We're like, you know, because I know there was a time where we're like, all right, let's do Heavy Metal Horror Month. And I'm thinking, wait a second, we tried that with Blaxploitation. Like, it was fun. I don't regret it. But, yeah. Man, it didn't work out the way like we planned. And then, you know, it all fell in place.
I think,
and,
we plan it ahead of time and, you know, say in a few months we do another theme and we use that few months to really get some things scheduled, I think we can do some stuff. Or even like a month ahead of time. We'll just do something. But
well, I'm not going to spoil anything, but you remember what I told you we should do during the summer, right?
I think so.
Yeah, that would be insane. So anyways, we have a couple things planned. If you want us to focus on, you know, a genre or something, you know, throw us some ideas because, you know, we like to stay in the horror stuff, but there's not a problem with, you know, branching out every once in a while talking about different films. Because, I mean, we do What's on Your Doorstep. We talk about everything. You know, we talk about San Andreas, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. Well, I think we want to get away from the, hey, we're talking about these two Blu-ray releases this week, and what do you think of the features, blah, blah, blah. We kind of are starting to cover all this in the What's on Your Doorstep. And the thing is, I have a backlog. I have a pile of things I need to get to.
Yeah.
That if I try to focus on new stuff, I'm never going to get to the old stuff, the stuff that I want to watch. So I think we cover that in What's on Your Doorstep, and we'll kind of, you know, just play by ear. But, you know, it's just a lot of fun. It's about having fun conversations about the genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any heavy metal horror movies that we didn't get to talking about?
Well, I mean, we've mentioned Trick or Treat, and I don't think we need to really go into
it. No, we've talked about that quite a bit. You know,
we love that film. I don't know. There's a couple. Like, I know we mentioned on one of our VHS segments, one of our first, we talked about Blood Tracks.
Yeah.
And that was always kind of a weird movie, but a favorite
that one's fun.
Of mine. Hey, you put me on the spot. I know.
Sorry, man. I mean, I'm trying to think of stuff. I think I've seen everything that we've talked about. Blood Tracks was the only one that I was like, oh, we need to make sure we mention that. Trick or Treat, of course, we've mentioned quite a bit. But,
Yeah, a little fun. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but something I did want to say. I didn't mention it on the show because I wanted to mention it to Mike, McPadden, because he was talking about Fastway did the soundtrack to Trick or Treat, and as we all know, Fast Eddie is from Fastway, and also it's another fucking popular band. Well, anyways, you never mentioned the lead singer. The lead singer is actually Dave King from Flogging Molly, the Irish folk band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's actually – he was on like their very first like two or three albums as the singer. So like – and you think about that. You think about Flogging Molly's music, which, you know, they're pretty popular, but they're like
their
old Irish –
what, Flogging Molly?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're all like, you know, this really laid back Irish, you know, kind of punk, you know, tends to the punk audience. But I mean, they play, you know, shows for elderly people and shit like that. But yeah, Dave King was the singer on the Trick or Treat soundtrack.
Oh,
it's insane.
You're talking about Eddie Clark. I mean, he was in Motorhead for a while.
Yeah, that's Fast Eddie. He was in Motorhead. Yeah, yeah. But who's the. The drummer, I thought, was from something.
Oh, I don't know.
No.
Anyways. You're going to take me into a Wikipedia hole that I don't want to go into right now.
Ooh, don't do that, Sean.
I know, exactly.
Don't do that. Don't do that. So, but yeah, I think we covered a lot. I mean, we talked about, you know, Rock and Roll Nightmare, Terror on Tour, October Blood, you know, Kiss Me, Sand in the Park, we talked about. So I think there's a lot we covered. You know, also, you know, Mike mentioned The Gate. We talked about Shock 'Em Dead not too long ago, Zombie Nightmare, stuff like that.
Yeah.
The weird Turbulence 3, a very underseen Hack-O-Lantern. I think some other things that we really didn't get to talk about that we might have is there's a film with Tony Basil. Yes, the Mickey Girl. you know, hey, Mickey's, you know, Slaughterhouse Rock, which is this weird vampire movie. But there's some weird dance sequences in the movie. It's not, I wouldn't really consider it heavy metal, but, you know, as Mike said, there's a broad spectrum of what we consider heavy metal horror, you know, and that's one of them. Another one that was in our VHS segment that I considered a heavy metal horror is Pledge Night. You know, which I'm a huge, huge fan of that movie. But you have Anthrax doing the soundtrack. Yeah. You know, we talked about Demons. I was really happy that Mike mentioned Terrorvision because I always considered that one, you know, heavy metal horror. You know, Slumber Party Massacre 2 has always been one of my favorite horror movies ever.
That's rockabilly horror.
Yeah, but it's so fucking good. It's ridiculous crazy. There's another film that I actually wanted to mention on here. We were thinking about doing the show on. I know I mentioned it briefly, but it's Hard Rock Nightmare. It's about this kid who, you know, very similar. I think I mentioned it in Hack O' Lantern. Has a very similar, like, beginning, but the grandfather fucks with the little kid a lot, you know, just teasing him and everything. And he makes him believe that he's really a vampire. Like, the grandfather makes the kid believe that the grandfather is a vampire. Cause he'll be like, ah, I'm a vampire. Ah. He'll like, he does actually really says that. And stuff like that. So the kid gets scared and ends up killing his grandfather. Cause he's scared and he thinks he's a vampire. So he has to like live with all this, like, you know, shit that he, you know, went through and stuff that he did. And then he has this years later, he has this band and he goes out in the woods to like practice, you know, at this cabin with his friends and, you know, the girls tag along and, they get stuck into this thing where there's like this werewolf the movie doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but it's just so nutty and silly that it's one of those things that just, you know, that works.
Have you heard about the movie Lone Wolf?
Yeah, Lone Wolf I actually mentioned on the show with Felissa Rose because she mentioned the director. She was hanging out with him. Lone Wolf's a lot of fun. It's just one of those movies that's really, like really hard to find.
Werewolf meets Rock Band.
Yeah, it's definitely one that's up there, I would say. It's just it's really low budget and, you know, kind of hard to find in a way. I think another one that we should have mentioned was but we already talked about on the show is New Year's Evil. You know, cuz Shadow's the band and has that killer song.
Nice.
I'm trying to think. My mind's like racing now cuz I remember I did this like heavy metal horror, you know, a couple years ago. Yeah. Vicious Lips. Have you seen Vicious Lips? I think that's on a set that Shout Factory put up, like one of those like four like DVD packs. It's an all girl band that actually gets a gig on another planet.
Dude, Albert Pune.
Is he? He's the one that directed that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so 86. Good. Yeah.
And I need to find this now. Are you sure Shout Factory? Is it Shout Factory? But maybe on one of their sci-fi sets, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of their sci-fi sets or something. God. Or maybe it's like one of those like double packs that Bill Help actually released them under that weird label, like Grindhouse Cinema label.
Oh, yeah. So this is like older Shout
Factory. I think it actually might be on there, like Full Moon did it or something like that. Also there's actually one of our listeners mentioned it. His name's Horror Remix, the Scream Dream. It's a shot on video, heavy metal horror film. The opening and the song in that movie is fucking amazing. Another one of those films that's kind of hard to find.
I found out where Vicious Lips is on. It's on Cult Movie Marathon, two disc set. It's $9.39 on Amazon.
Yeah, it's Vicious Lips is definitely worth it.
Invasion of the Bee Girls, The Devil's Eight, and Unholy Rollers are also on that.
Yes,
on there.
That's the set I have.
Nice.
So definitely worth the money.
Oh my God, those sets are fun. All right.
So I don't know. I think that's about it. Other than, you know, Danny Filth from Cradia Filth made a heavy metal horror movie that's like 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Oh, Ridley Scott is going to be producing.
Yeah, I heard about that
movie about a Norwegian metal band and some murders.
Well, all Norwegian death metals are involved in some type of murder.
God, what is what?
Burzum is had a band, and he like murdered his drummer and burned down like 7 churches, and he went to prison. And he made music in prison, wow. And it's really, really dark and weird. And then he got out, and he continues to make music.
Nice. Yeah, I was trying to find the article about that Ridley Scott film, but that, I mean, he's, you know, that's something to keep an eye on.
You know, another really, I mean, this is more or less punk rock, but I mean, like I said, in vain of what McBeardo said, was Wild Zero, the fucking Japanese zombie movie. Oh, yeah. With Guitar Wolf. Oh my God, dude. Talk about pure insanity. Like, that movie is insane. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot, you know, like I said, Dream Maniac, the David Decato film about the heavy metal dude that like makes a deal with like a succubus. And then she gets, the succubus gets him to like bring girls so he can she can feed on him and shit. I think it's like the exact premise of the movie. But yeah, definitely a lot of fun, good music and shit like that.
Awesome.
So it's a really fun thing to actually get into heavy metal horror, because I mean, if you like music and horror films, you're gonna either have a really good soundtrack and a shitty movie, or a shitty soundtrack with a good movie.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll get both, like, really good things, like, you know, Trick or Treat and Black Roses.
Yeah.
And Rock and Roll Nightmare, which I was glad that those were the main focuses for our show.
Here we go. Well, here's the Ridley Scott information, because it was killing me. The film's called Lords of Chaos, ooh, directed by Jonas Åkerlund, and starring Rory Culkin and, whoa, Caleb Landry.
Damn,
and it's Rory based Culkin. On the 1998 book Lords of Chaos. He co-wrote the picture with the book's authors.
Damn.
So.
Look out for that.
Let's see. What did Mayhem? There's a band called Mayhem that it's kind of based off of, and that band is pissed about the book. He says, the co-founder says, wait, Mayhem co-founder and bassist Necro Butcher told Rolling, wow, Stone, "This book, Lords of Chaos, is fucking crap, and that some stupid Swedes are going to make a movie out of it is not okay. I'll do everything I can to stop this film. Tell the Swedes and the Hollywood people to go fuck themselves."
Wow. Mayhem's been around for a while. I'm not a listener of Mayhem.
Yeah.
But I listen to that. I've heard them through Venom. That was the band that I was, you know who was in Mayhem? Burzum. Well, Burzum's the band he's in, but he has like a weird name, like Varg something. But Varg is the murderer.
Varg Count Grishnak Virknes cut the head off the co-founder of the Norwegian black metal Mayhem.
So that, dude, how funny is that? We just put that together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just mentioned that.
So that's,
yeah.
Oh my God. So this movie is going to be about that.
So that's the band that he was in. Yeah, I kind of figured, because it was like, I was trying to think of like murders. Like, I was a joke because they all like, you know, do weird shit. But yeah, that's where that stems from. Is that,
oh my God.
That murder that he murdered his, it was the drummer, right?
It just says co-founder here. Co-founder.
Oh, okay.
But, dude, they've been trying to get this movie made for the past 2 years, attached with the same actors and the same director, and looks like Ridley Scott finally came in front of the money with his production company. So it's finally going to get made.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
I wonder why they wouldn't want to make the movie. I mean, the guy fucking murdered people. And
he went to jail. I mean.
Yeah, and now he was, like, released, and he makes music still.
So crazy, man.
Jesus.
That's ridiculous. Okay.
So.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's podcast. We're wrapping up heavy metal horror. Hope you guys found some movies to watch. And I had a lot of fun with these. And we hope you guys did too. As always, please support our sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Coffee Shop of Horrors has some awesome coffee. And if you're a coffee drinker, check them out for sure. Use the code SCREAMCAST when checking out. You will get 10% off your order. Also, please go to grindhousevideo.com. He is stocked and ready to rock.
Stocked with his cock.
He just put out, he just got a bunch of the Pieces Blu-ray in, and that thing is going to sell out probably, so I would imagine. That thing looks like it's been selling, and he's selling it now, which is before the release date, FYI. So if you want those, grab them from him. And if your order is over $25, use the code SCREAMCAST10. You'll get 10% off your order. And, of course, Wolfman of Mars have a new album out.
Yes, they do. Bandcamp. I listened to it.
A lot of fun.
Is that one that's out?
It's a brand new one.
I think that's the one I've listened to. It's got, the cartoon on the front.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I did listen to it.
It's called Danger, Peril, Threat. So it's out on Bandcamp right now. And it's going to be hitting Spotify and iTunes, I believe. But we would suggest you go there. They're only selling it for $4. I paid more than $4 for it.
Yeah, that's the stuff that you can donate whatever you want, right?
Yeah, it's $4 or more. So
gotcha.
Give the dudes some love. I mean,
there's some really cool shit on Bandcamp, man, that needs to.
Oh, dude, I've spent so much money on Bandcamp.
Oh, you want to spend more money?
I've spent too much money on Bandcamp because there's a lot of great bands on there. And they sell stuff for fairly cheap.
Go to Bandcamp, go to VHS Glitch.
Oh, shit.
And you'll go nuts. Oh, it's like one of the best bands out there.
Oh, my God. Okay. But right now we're talking about Wolfman of Mars. Buy the new album, Danger, Peril, Threat.
That's not very nice.
And then, of course, Kevin Spencer, go to inkspatters.com.
Is it .com or .net?
.com.
.net's the porno.
.net's the something different. But he has a gallery there. He has a store. He has some t-shirts. He designed, if he didn't know, he designed our two logos. And please buy some stuff for him. As always, if you buy anything from our sponsors, send a screenshot to us at readme@thescreamcast.com. You'll be entered into next month's drawing for some free shit. Otherwise, all of you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, Sean. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.